How's everybody doing? I'm Sean and I am an alcoholic. Thank you.
My bad.
By the book. My sobriety date is May 23rd, 2008, and my home group is the Fourth Dimension Group. We meet at 7 o'clock on Friday nights at that Trinity Presbyterian Church. I have a sponsor, and I also have a service position, and those are definitely a couple of things that I'm very honored to have in Alcoholics Anonymous. It makes me accountable to Alcoholics Anonymous to have those things, and I'm really nervous. Never spoke in front of a crowd this big. I was born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts. Got a couple of fans out there. Four brothers, two sisters, loving mother, loving father. Definitely come from an alcoholic home. There was always alcohol involved around when I was a kid. I remember that. Remember running to the refrigerator and, I don't call this my first drink, but I know my dad used to let me go to the refrigerator and grab him another beer, and he used to let me take a sip off of it because I liked the taste of it. It's okay. I'll come. I get nervous a little bit at the beginning, but I'll come around and. But anyway, so pretty decent. I'll give you a little history before I actually picked up the first drink, and I was definitely restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, I can remember back when I, when I got into the book with a sponsor, and I looked back through my life and. I was just always nervous. I always had this disposition and just never really felt comfortable in my skin. And I traveled through life through that. I traveled through like the first 14 years of my life until I actually picked up that first drink like that. Always getting in trouble, always like trying to measure up, always trying to do things to like stick out. And, it always got me into a lot of trouble. And, I remember picking up that first drink. It was a weekend thing. A couple of kids that I was hanging out with had mentioned it, like on Monday when I was in, I think the ninth grade. And, I was a little older in high school because I stayed back a couple of years, So they had mentioned they were going to drink that weekend, and I was all for it, I always followed people my whole life. I never came up with an original decision on my own, and, They wanted to drink, and I was like, "Let's do it." And we went to the liquor store, and we asked one of the guys that was hanging out front of the liquor store to buy us some alcohol. And I got drunk, and nothing bad happened that night. I went home. I don't know if it was that night or a couple of nights later when I picked up another drink that I ended up getting brought home from the police. And still, it was okay in my house. It didn't matter. And And that just set the ball in motion for a lot of, I ended up in with a lot of jackpots. I was the guy that when we started getting a little bit older and like into sophomore and junior year in high school, like we started going to parties and stuff like that. And, I was a blackout drinker. So I was the guy that always fell asleep first and woke up with no eyebrows, As you can see, they're pretty thick now, And that's how it went for me. I was always getting in trouble, getting arrested, and it had everything to do with alcohol, and I had no clue. I had no clue whatsoever, and I just went on through life like that. Eventually, I ended up graduating high school by the skin of my teeth. My dad, he was working for this graphic arts company, and I wanted to follow in his footsteps because bottom line, he was my hero. He raised seven kids. He got up and he went to work for 33 years, and I wanted to follow in his footsteps, and I embarrassed him. Bottom line, he got me a job when I got out of high school, and I think I made it like 6 months, and it's because I'm fresh out of high school and I'm used to partying all night, and a friend of mine that I grew up with, my best friend today, and we both got jobs. We both took the same trade, and we both got jobs. He got the 3-to-11 shift, and I didn't think this was fair either. I ended up getting the 11-to-7 shift, So I was used to drinking all night and going into work and stuff like that. And we both got laid off, but he got called back. I didn't, you know, because he's not one of us. You know, he can have a drink and he can go home and take care of his family, and that's not what happens in my life. So I got laid off. I embarrassed my dad, and you know, and that just again set the ball in motion for a bunch of lost jobs. And excuse me. You know, I'll share a little bit about my family history, though. A lot of us are alcoholics and addicts. You know, there's definitely drugs involved in my story, and I'll definitely just touch very, very briefly on it, because I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, and I believe in, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't know where I was going with that, but but anyways, my dad was an alcoholic. His identical twin brother was an alcoholic. I have a younger brother who's an alcoholic and an addict, an older brother who's a young alcoholic and an addict, a younger sister who's an alcoholic and an addict. And none of these things make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is when I pick up one, I can't stop. And and I don't know where I'm going to end up. But anyways, I have an older brother. I have two older brothers that are alcoholics, a younger sister, a younger brother that's alcoholic and addict. And my dad passed away from untreated alcoholism. Back in 97, and I still hadn't even known I had a problem. I was about 21 when he passed away, and I still didn't even know I had a problem with alcohol. you know, and this is a guy on my 17th birthday. We would drink. I mean, he hadn't known I was drinking yet, and he was like, "Oh, we're going to have some drinks for your 17th birthday." And I'm like, "Oh, great." I'm like, "What are we drinking?" And he's like, "White Russians." I'm like, "Oh, I love those things." And he's like, "What do you mean you love those things, you know?" You know, and then we're sitting there and we're drinking, and I'm just getting wasted, and I'm pining. Now this is an alcoholic telling another alcoholic that you better watch your drinking because there's something wrong here, you know. And that's just how it went, you know. I'm just trying to identify. I'm just trying to get you guys to identify that, you know, I'm definitely an alcoholic, and once I pick up one, there's no stopping for me. I end up in either jail, a detox, a halfway house, a sober house, and that's my story, you know. Anyway, so after my dad passed away, you know, I just I used that as ammunition, and I ran with that for a little while because, you know, I definitely did not, you know, this is my hero, and he passed away from untreated alcoholism. You know, he never got a chance to sit in these rooms, and so I ran with that for a little while. I ended up in my first detox when I was about 21 years old, and bottom line, I wasn't ready. You know, God hadn't entered into my life yet, and. You know, eventually, I started with alcohol when I was about 14, 15 years old, and eventually I ended up addicted to opiates. And, you know, so, you know, alcohol was always there, it was always on the table, but, you know, I had to mix in a little dry goods, you know, I had to get, this is what I did. And I ended up in that detox, and I went to my first meeting, and nothing happened. I raised my hand, said I was new to the area. I mean, I said I wasn't new to the area, but I was new to meetings, and I needed some phone numbers. I got a suggestion from someone that was working at that detox when I left, and they said, you know, if you do this, they'll pass out, probably give you some literature, and they'll probably pass out a list of phone numbers. And I didn't call anybody off that list, and you know, the pattern just repeated itself, and I ended up in and out of detox, a bunch of detoxes, you know. I'd probably been, you know, and this is another thing that I used to blame on my parents, you know. I'm born on New Year's Day, and I used to always blame that on them, you know. I'm like, that's why I'm an alcoholic, you know. and so in and out of detox, and eventually I ended up just taking a suggestion one day. And I went to a detox, and then they had a place next door. It was a short-term intensive treatment program, so I had no money. I was I didn't have a job, and I mean, I wasn't collecting welfare or anything like that. But I was definitely had MassHealth. You know, that's insurance that they give you back in Massachusetts if you don't have it, and you can go to, you know, I was in and out of detox a real lot with that insurance, and I went to this one place. It was in Cape Cod, and it was called High Point, and I went next door. They said, I think you should go next door. You've been in and out of here a lot of times. I think you should go next door. You know, obviously something isn't working. So I went next door. It was a 14-day short-term intensive treatment program. and I stayed. And my insurance was getting ready to run out, and he said to me, he was like, what are you gonna do? And like, this is the first, I think this is my higher power doing for me what I can't do for myself. I said, I don't know what to do. Can you help me? And he said, yeah, I'm gonna send you to a halfway house. I said, let's do it. And I went off to a halfway house. I went to the interview, came back, packed my bags, and went down there the next day. And I stayed there for like 5 3/4 months. And, you know, they tell you to join a group, get a sponsor, get a service position, and I gave them lip service. I did all those things, but it was like, yeah, that's my sponsor way back there. You know, I never did a damn thing to sober up, you know. And, eventually I got thrown out for not saving money. I was supposed to get money orders, never did it. I was buying clothes and sneakers, you know, because it was all about the outside look, you know. Dead on the inside, but I was looking good on the outside. I was like, this is great. And I moved in with my sponsor, and he was more my friend than he was my sponsor. And we just hung out, and we went to meetings, and I stayed sober for a little over a year. You know, but, you know, if you don't get active in the book, and you don't have a sponsor, and you don't have a service position, and you have none of those things, the desire to drink will come back for this alcoholic. You know, this is my experience, you know, and it did. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I picked up. And the alcohol works great for a little while, but you know, eventually I end up back on drugs, and eventually I sobered up, and I was doing really good, you know, cause in and out of detox, and I ended up sobering up, going to another halfway house, got thrown out again for the same exact thing, you know, because it was all about, you know, they call it the Holy Trinity, the girl, the job, and the apartment, you know, and never worked, you know. Anyway, so I did that again. I went to this other halfway house. They caught on quicker than the last halfway house. They threw me out in 3 months. And you know, I was in contact with my real good friend, Dave. He had a really good job in the painters union, making really good money, and he seen something. I wasn't doing anything. I hadn't changed not a lick. He goes, I want to help you out. I want to get you a job. And he got me a good job in the painters union, and I was making really good money. And then eventually, when I got thrown out of that halfway house, I moved right into a sober house so I'd be in a safe place, because my house was chaotic. There was just a lot of drug use going on, a lot of alcoholism going on. And bottom line, I mean, once I get over that hump and I'm not using and I'm not drinking, like, I mean, my life's pretty good. You know, it's pretty good. I didn't change any, but, you know, I don't want to put drugs or alcohol in my body anymore. And I moved into that sober house. He got me that job. I started working. I bought a brand new car. Got another girlfriend. Moved into that apartment after that in a little while. And the same exact thing happened. You know, I did no work. I was uneducated. I did no work on myself. And the girlfriend left, and I picked up a drink. And eventually I ended up on drugs again. And this is what brought me down here to Florida. I was working all day in the painters union, and I ended up using some drugs with a friend of mine that I had met in detox. He's actually a really good friend of mine today, though, and he's not sober today, and it stinks. We ended up using some drugs, and you know, I had a really, really nice apartment. I really did. It really looked good. I mean, from the outside, looking in, it looked like I had everything going on. It looks like I had everything together, but it was all false, you know. I ended up overdosing, and I kind of give you a little description of the apartment. When you walked in the front door, you go left, you go to the living room, you go right, you go to the bedrooms. And on the left-hand side, when you head to the living room, there's a set of bifold doors, and I woke up in the closet with the emergency room, with the fire guys right up above me, and the ambulance guys, and I had this big bandage on my arm because they had to put something in my body to revive me, or I would have passed away. And that was it. The landlord lived downstairs. He was like, you got 15 days to get out. I ended up in the emergency room, and like a good alcoholic, I had an everything must go sale. You know, couch went out the back door. You know, everything. TV went out the. You know, it was crazy, and. That guy was probably really glad to get me out of there. But anyways, so you know, like a good alcoholic I am, you know, when things go wrong in my life, who do I turn to? My biggest enabler, my mom. And I called my mom and I said, "Ma," you know, and I probably lied to her. You know, not probably, definitely lied to her. Definitely lied to her. And, you know, a lot of things got accepted in that house. It didn't matter. You know, as long as I was, you know, I was collecting unemployment, so I was contributing to the household a little bit. And, you know, I had a vehicle and I could, you know, do things for her. But anyways, that has nothing to do with it. But, so I move back home to mom's house, and I sleep on her couch, and I continue to use, and I continue to drink, and my life continues to stink, and I just get sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know, because those prior little stints of sobriety that I had, you know, I put together a year, and my life was okay, you know. It was okay. I mean, it's a lot better now, but it was okay then, and then I relapsed, and I ended up putting that 18 months together, and that's when I ended up at my mom's house, but my life was okay, you know. Man, it's great to have a God in your life today. I tell you that right now. So I moved to my mom's house, and I'm not doing that. And I'm watching TV all day, and I'm using drugs, and I'm drinking alcohol, and I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I had seen my older brother Michael end up. My older brother Michael ended up doing 10 years in state prison for masked armed robbery, and you know, crack addiction brought him there. And when he got out, my older brother Richie, who lives down here in Florida, wanted to help him, so I see Michael and Kevin, that's my younger brother, he's also an alcoholic and an addict, and they both come down, I think, together. And their addictions both brought them back in like 3 months because they started drinking and using down here, and it was just crazy. My brother Richie ended up throwing them out of the house, and I come up with this little idea in my head that, you know, I think I can do it in Florida. I think if I go to Florida, I know they say not to do a geographical cure, but I think if I go to Florida, I could stay sober. So I called my brother crying. And I lied to him too. I didn't tell him that I was, excuse me, I didn't tell him that I was addicted to opiates over the phone. But eventually I ended up telling him when I was coming down here. I called him crying. I said, "I need help, dude. My life stinks." I always get choked up at this part because it's definitely God working through my older brother to bring me here tonight. And it's amazing. And I call him and I tell him I need help. My life is really, really bad. And he said to me, he goes, "I'll call you back in 20 minutes. I got to run this by my wife." You know, it's like a revolving door at my brother's house, you know. Everybody that needs help, call Richie. He'll help you, you know. Honestly, it's like a, you know, I'm from Newport Richie, and it's like a train wreck, Newport Richie, when the Montgomerys come here, you know. So he calls me back, and he says, he goes, "I'll let you come here." He goes, "I got two things that you need to do, you know, and you need to promise me you're going to do these two things before you get on that plane." And I said, "I can do that." I go, "What are they?" And he goes, "I need you to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need you to find a job within 2 weeks or you can't live here." So I said, "I can do those things." And before I got to Florida, they had already got me a job, so there was no action there. I was taking the easiest off the way again. No, but I showed up at Alcoholics Anonymous down in Newport Richey, Florida, at the A Club, and that place saved my life. I truly believe that today. I showed up there on it was May 10th. Oh, let me back up a little bit because this is important. May 10th, I got here. May 22nd, I took my last drink. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for about a week or 2 weeks, and you know, I was going to meetings, and I was really uncomfortable. I was full of fear. I didn't know anybody. I didn't like Florida. It was crazy. And I had a temporary sponsor. I met him at the A Club, and he worked right around the corner from my house, and he owned his own barbershop up there, and I used to drive my bike up there because I didn't have a vehicle at the time, and he used to be like, "Yeah, just come by, we'll talk." And I used to go by there on a daily basis, and I'd talk to him after I would go out job hunting and stuff like that, because the job I had didn't start yet. And so I was going to a lot of meetings, a meeting every single night, and I ain't got invited to a cookout with my older brother. And my older brother, he drinks pretty much every night, you know. I don't know if he can use a seat in here. It's not up to me to decide if he needs a seat in here, but I don't know. I think he does. But anyway, so I get invited to that cookout, and I tell my sponsor, I'm trying to be honest in all my affairs, you know, I really am. And I tell my sponsor that, my temporary sponsor, that I'm going to this cookout. And I should have noticed this was a sign when he said this to me. He was like, is there going to be alcohol there? The second he said that, instantly I got defensive. And I said, listen, I'm not going to hide from alcohol for the rest of my life. I had no business being around alcohol in 10 days sober. The only person to boot, you know. I went there and I got drunk. I did. I got drunk and then I went around for about 2 weeks and I didn't tell anybody. And I used to go to this KISS group up in Newport Richey, you know, on Mondays and Fridays. I was really active with that group for a long time. I used to go there and set up and stay late and make the coffee, help make the coffee and everything. But anyway, so I go there and now I walked around for 2 weeks with this burden on my shoulders. Now I'm ready to get drunk again. I picked up a 30-day chip, only had 2 weeks, and then talked about how great my life was, you know? I was a fraud, bottom line. Like, my life was, if I continued to live like that, my life was gonna, and I would have ended up back in Massachusetts, bottom line. And so I was at an AA meeting on a Tuesday night up in Arapika. No, and I broke down crying to this guy that, like, I was like, dude, I got something to tell you. And he's like, what's that? I was like, dude, I drank 2 weeks ago, and if I don't tell anybody, I'm going to get drunk again. He's like, pick up a white chip, start over, pick a new day. And I did. I picked the 23rd, and, well, it was the 23rd. I didn't pick it. But from that day on, I made a decision that I was going to do things a lot different around here, that I was going to get a sponsor, I was going to join a group, I was going to get a service position, and I've always had a service position, and I'm, you know, coming up on, you know, in about another 6 months, I'll have 4 years of sobriety, and it's like, it's an amazing thing. And so I got a sponsor, and you know, and he couldn't make it here tonight. And you know, it's his 4-year-old son's birthday, and that's okay. You know, that's why we get sober, so we can live with family and do the things that we're supposed to do and show up. And anyways, I remember I came down here at like 6 months sober, and Steven asked me to speak here. He popped the question just like he did to Troy, you know, like 4 minutes before the meeting started. And and I was with my friend Chris and the old timer one of the old timers, Boston Joe, they call him. He had like he's still sober. He just moved back to Massachusetts. He's like 45 years sober. And you know, and I was freaking out. Steven's like, yeah, you got to speak. And I'm like, oh man, what am I gonna do? And it was the exact same feeling I had down here tonight when I was coming down. I get nervous up here. You know, this is one of my least favorite things to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I know I have to do this. I'm a great greeter. Stick me at the door with a name tag on, and I'll greet the hell out of that meeting. You know, no one makes it through my group without shaking my hand. I'll tell you that right now. So I said to myself I was gonna do things different. You know, and you know, but back to what I was talking about with Steve. Like, you know, I was in the bathroom behind the toilet praying. You know, because I didn't know what else to do. You know, not tonight. You know, me and my friend Chris, we went around the corner and said a prayer before. You know, that I carry a message of hope tonight. And, like, if there's, like, one newcomer out there tonight that doesn't have a sponsor and he's got a decision that, like, he wants to ask this guy, like, ask him. It'll save your life. Anyway, so I get real active in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I start showing up to that KISS group that I was talking about, and I'm like, my sponsor, I said, he 12-stepped me outside of a meeting one day. You know, I showed up there like, I think it was like 2.5 weeks sober, and he was like, you got a sponsor. And I'm like, I have a temporary sponsor, but he's not working for me. I need someone to bring me through the book page by page and read this book. I'll read or whatever I got to do. I need something. It's not working. And he was like, it was like asking someone on a first date, you know. I said to him, like, oh, I was really, you know, I like what you, they tell me to find someone that you like what they have and go after it. And, you know, I've been watching this guy for a little while. I had been here a couple of months, and, you know, I really liked what he had for sobriety, and I asked him, and he said, I'll sponsor you. And he told me, what are you willing to do? And I told him I was willing to do anything to stay sober. And, you know, he had to call me on that a couple of times. You know, we started reading, you know, all the, you know, doctor's opinion, Bill's story, you know, more about, you know, right into it. And we started going through the steps, and then we got to my fourth step, and that's when I guess they call it a balk. You know, I balked. I didn't want to do anything, you know. So I start writing this fourth step, and I start stuttering a little bit, and he came to me and he goes, listen, if you don't finish that fourth step, you need to find a new sponsor. And I finished it, and then I made it, and I made it through the rest of the steps, I'm drawing a blank. But so I started sponsoring other people. I started picking, when I raised my hand, I had met a guy, Eddie, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and Eddie took me everywhere for like the first year. He took me everywhere. He introduced me to everybody, and it was amazing. We went everywhere. He took me to ball games and took me to AA. It was just incredible. Oh man, what time is it? I got a long time left. I know that. What time is this meeting end? Huh? 8:45? It might end a little early tonight. But anyway, some of the things have... and that's okay, you know. Meeting starts on time, ends early. But anyway, so some of the things I had to deal with I'll talk about my little brother for a little while, because it was definitely a traumatic thing that happened in my life, and thank God he's still here today. Yeah, he's definitely messed up, still on drugs, on a methadone clinic, and it's pretty sad, you know. Anyway, so it happened about 2 years ago, so I was about a year and a half sober, and I get a phone call from my nephew crying, and my little brother Kevin had and a couple of the guys that are here from Boston will know exactly, you know, where this spot is in Boston. But anyways, he tried to commit suicide, and he jumped off a 170-foot bridge into the Boston Harbor, and he survived. And so now I'm down here with my older brother Richie, who I still live with today, my younger sister, and me. And we decide, obviously, we have to go back to Massachusetts, and we have to be there for my, you know, and there's a guy at my group, and he talks about being like a brother to your sister, you know, a son to your mother, and I knew that's exactly what I had to do. We all hopped in the little vehicle that I had bought when I ended up buying a little vehicle, and we all hopped in the vehicle and we drove back to Massachusetts, and it was definitely a difficult time. He was in a coma for like him and a friend that I went to school with. They both jumped off together. They tried to commit suicide together, and they both survived. It's a miracle, definitely a miracle. He was in a coma for like 28 days, and I got the utmost respect for like the medical profession. Like this kid, like he should not be here today, and they nursed him back to health. He was tell you a little bit about it. He was spiking a fever, and they wrapped him in like an air conditioner, and they took his fever down. He was fighting to stay alive, and they didn't want his body to fight, so they put him on a paralytic, so it would like just he would just lay there and recover. And eventually, he woke up, and he was out of the hospital, and like 2 months later, and like a week after he left the hospital, he was using drugs and alcohol again. And this illness of mine that I have, it doesn't discriminate, you know, it doesn't matter. And he's still out there to this day, and I have a little sister in recovery today. She's probably got like 90 days or 4 months, and that's pretty amazing. I try to get her into a D, you know, because that's what this is about. This is about helping the newcomer, and she was out there using not too long ago, and you know, I had called a friend from this group, and I said, my sister needs help, and I need to bring her to a detox, but they're so tough to get into down here. It's not like Massachusetts. Detox is around every corner back in Massachusetts. You know, you want to get sober, it's no problem back in Massachusetts. So I called a friend from this group, and they told me what to do. They told me to drop her off at this Axe detox and just drive away. Bottom line, I did that, and she's still sober today. It was pretty cool, though. So now if I got to work with a wet drunk and he needs a detox, drop him off at X. But anyways, I have an unbelievable job today. You know, and everything I have in my life today, I have nothing to do with why I'm standing here tonight. It's all God. And I'm really grateful that I went outside and said a prayer before I was able to come up here and speak tonight, because man, I love when God speaks through me. You know, I do have a great job today. I have unbelievable friends in my life today. I've been to in the last couple of years, I've been to about 4 or 5 conventions. A little bit about some of my friends. You know, my buddy Chris over here. He was in and out of my life for like the first 4 or 5 months. He couldn't get it. He's been sober almost 3 years now. Because of the state of Florida, he had to go away for a little while. You know, I do that's how my life is. I do great. I need to be pulled out of society and slowly weaned right back in. but anyway, so I meet Chris down here at the dry dock, and you know, he can't get it. And I'm talking to my sponsor. I'm like, you know, I got this guy that I'm not working with him. We're just friends, and we're going to meetings together. And he's like, dude, only go to Alcoholics Anonymous functions with this guy. You know, be around safe people around him. You know, and I listened to him. So we only went to meetings together. And eventually he ended up going away. And you know, when he came back out, he hooked right back up. And there was something different about this kid this time. And you know, he had it's definitely not a coincidence how this happened. I'll tell you that today. He ended up hooking up with this guy in prison. And this guy was in prison on an amends that he had to make. He went to jail sober. And it's about saving lives. This is unbelievable. And this guy brought him through the steps in prison. And he came out a changed person. And when he called me, we hooked back up. And he got very active right in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's just amazing thing what happens. Anyways, okay. We ended up getting out, and my friend Dan motivated us all to go to the International Convention out in Texas, and then something happened in the family, and Dan couldn't go. So we had a hotel room out there, and me and Chris, we brought a newcomer. He had like 90 days, and we brought a newcomer out there, and it was an amazing trip. So this guy that brings Chris through the steps. So we go to registration out there. Yeah, we check into the hotel and we go to registration. And who's the first guy we bump into? The guy that brought Chris through the steps. It was just like, I couldn't believe it. And that set the pattern for that whole weekend. You know, that was it was amazing. So we're out there and, you know, drove out there in the car that I bought. And, you know, I'm with two good friends of mine that I met Chris. I knew him for a long time. And we got this guy, Harry, with us. And, it was just awesome. And you know, and then I came back, and a couple of weeks later, or a month or two later, we drove down, me, my little sister, and another friend of mine, we drove down to Miami, and we went to that convention. I don't know, it's just a really good life today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I came back from that convention, and I went over to Cocoa Beach for another convention, and then we just came back from Orlando for the state convention. It's pretty cool, you know, going to conventions. What else? Like I was saying, I got a really good job today. I have a really safe place to lay my head at night. I got unbelievable friends in my life. I got a couple of guys that I go to AA with that work with the same company for me, so it's pretty cool. You know, you see a familiar face when you're going into work in the morning, and guys that are doing the right thing, and, you know, guys are showing up that aren't hungover the night before and living a productive life. It's pretty cool. I don't know. I belong to this group. Tell you a little history about my group that I belong to. It's pretty amazing, you know. And they're all here tonight, you know. Everybody from my group's here tonight. Not everybody, but a lot of them. You know, we belong to this group. It's at the A Club, and it's called Young Aces at the time. And a couple of the guys that are in a halfway house around the area come up with an idea to start this young people's group. And they did. They started the group. And we only had like 10 people showing up on a weekly basis. It was Fridays at 6:45 at the A Club, and you know, so now we're all showing up. Wes, John, Chris, you know, a bunch of guys. I don't know if there's anybody else is here that from there, but we're all showing up, and there's no unity between the group whatsoever. There's nothing. It's just like you stick a greeter at the door, put on a pot of coffee, and there's your meeting, you know. And we decided to move it to a church. You know, we have a business meeting, and I wasn't even a member at this group. I was just supporting it, just going because my friends were there. And eventually I joined. I joined either a couple of months before we moved or right about a month before we, you know, because the group needed support, and all my friends went there, so I wanted to belong to this group. And, you know, so we come up with a new name for it. It's called the Fourth Dimension Group. And, you know, and I believe the Fourth Dimension is right here, right now, you know. And so Chris starts finding a church, and we come up with a church, and now we need insurance, so we got to get insurance, and we start having this group, and you know, so we went from like 10 people to about 30, 35 people for the first couple of meetings, maybe 3-4 meetings, and then, you know, then like 50 or 60 people started showing up, and then, you know, we're in this long skinny hall, and now we're like, man, we're getting too big for this hall. And they have another hall right beside that church that we got about 120 people that show up on a regular basis. We probably have about 30 to 35 group members, and it's just an amazing meeting. You know, I have a service position at that meeting. I'm the greeter at that meeting. I was the chairperson. Whatever they tell me to do, I just do. You know, and I don't know. I've been through the steps. I'm going back through it again with my sponsor right now. I have to write another fourth step, you know. And hopefully this time I don't have to add to it, you know. And that's okay, you know. I made some poor choices in recovery, and it's okay. As long as I didn't make that, you know, that decision about picking up that first drink. And, you know, and I attend a lot of solution-based meetings. I really do. I go to another group called the Westminster Group, and we go over the doctor's opinion in the first three steps. And, you know, I don't know. I think I have to shut up now. That's about it. Thank you.
Rich Alcoholic. Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to help or to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.